with the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
6:34 on a Thursday night in Lansing. So we've heard from the Truscott Rossman CEO, Kelly Rossman McKinney, and from State Senator Rick Jones. Now I'm joined by the editor of MERS, Kyle Malin. MERS, of course, was right in the middle of this dust-up. Welcome to the program, Kyle.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Michael.
So when it comes to this kind of a situation, is this a typical Lansing political squabbling or something more?
Well, I think this is a little bit more. I mean, typically we don't have second and third day stories on things that we write in our pundit stories. This is indeed an exception, and it's because the use of the word hooker, I think, was offensive to Kelly Rossman and other women as well. I don't think she was alone in that. And in fact, when the word was first used, and we got some comments from Kelly Rossman, she had already heard about the use, interestingly enough. And we actually called others in town just to see if this is something that really rises to a level where we should be paying attention to it. And we found that the answer was yes. There were other professional women in town who were offended by the use of that word, and so that's why we continued to write a second-day story on it. And again, we're going to write a third-day story on it because of the apology by Senate Majority Leader Randy Richardville, which you've already talked about on the program.
No, he did apologize, although Senator Jones said that Richardville did not encourage him to do likewise. What do you make of that?
Well, Rick Jones is a big boy. If he wants to apologize and thinks that the word is inappropriate, he'll do so. And he's not going to tell another elected official what he's going to do. But as the head of his caucus, he does have a certain amount of damage control that he's got to prevent. I mean, he doesn't want this to encompass the entire caucus. So the best way to make the issue go away, as far as he's concerned, is to divorce himself from it and say, hey, listen, I said my apologies. Let's just be done with it. If Senator Jones wants to be done with it and wants to handle it with an apology, then he can do so. It sounds like he's taken a different avenue.
Now, the whole situation was triggered by Kelly naming Senator Jones as one of the biggest losers of the year. Is that really a correct distinction?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what she did. But, you know, this is something that is typical here of the MERS newsletter. We like to ask folks around town to kind of get their assessment. I mean, who do you think had the best year in 2011? Who didn't have so good of a year? You know, interestingly, she also named the House Democratic Caucus as being one of the losers of the year as well. You know, Senator Jones did mention that she is traditionally seen as a bit of a Democrat herself, but she did also call out the House Democratic Caucus is not having a very good year either yet, but they did not care to respond to that assessment.
So when it comes to potential consequences, are there really any for a lawmaker using a word that that some people are offended by or hurt by?
You know, it's really up to the leadership what they want to do and the caucus if they feel like a caucus member is going a bit out of control. You know, about 10 years ago, we had a situation here in Lansing with a senator from Macomb County named David Jay, whose antics and brush-ups with the law and silly shenanigans were disturbing that they actually kicked him out of office. So they can remove somebody from office if they feel like there's significant grounds. Now, this doesn't rise to that level in any way, shape, or form. I mean, let's make that clear. You know, there is things internally that could happen if a member was breaking the law or, you know, significantly embarrassing themselves. In this case, you know, somebody was offended. You know, this is kind of a simple PR situation where I think an apology could have just made this a one-day story as opposed to a three-day trilogy.
I'm talking to Kyle Malin. He's the editor of the MERS newsletter. You can find him at mirsnews.com. Is there a difference, Kyle, between state lawmakers going at each other versus a state lawmaker having an exchange like this with a lobbyist or someone from the private sector?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure if there is or not. You know, there's barbs that are tossed around, as Senator Jones mentioned earlier in the program, all the time. I mean, he is correct in saying that there are barbs and attacks and counterattacks all the time in this town, and we cover them quite extensively, just because it's what we do, and so people read those and whatnot. This one, though, it seems crossed the line in the view of Kelly Rossman and others, and so that's why there's follow-up on it. You know, as far as and I just also want to say, getting back to your previous question about anything that Senate leadership could do, you know, there are other things. I guess they could censure him if you know, the leadership thought that was appropriate, or, you know, they could take away a committee. You know, actually, a previous Senate Majority Leader actually did that to a member, took away some committee assignments for something completely unrelated. But, you know, there are powers that a leader can take over a member if he or she thinks that a member's just stepped over the line or done something inappropriate.
I mean, considering this legislative year, the enormous changes, many unpopular changes that were made in 2011, isn't it curious that we see this kind of exchange over a very trivial issue, ultimately?
Yeah, well, I guess that's what happens when the lawmakers aren't in session, though. I mean, seriously. You know, it's the first week of the year. The House is going to come back on the 11th next Wednesday. And from all indications, they're going to get ready to go right off the bat and start looking at some things that were left over from last year, no-fault insurance and fixing the unlimited benefit for car accident victims, I think, being very high on the list right out of the chute.
It's funny you say fixing. Obviously, many opponents to changing our no-fault law. Now, it came out in the fall. They were working on it. It came out of committee, and then it seemed to just kind of stall and almost die away. Is it basically in hibernation? Do you expect our no-fault law to be changed?
Yeah, it is in hibernation. And will it be changed? You know, I don't know if there's the votes yet to change it, because there is such an affection to having that lifeline out there. You know, if you are, I mean, because it could happen to anybody. You know, you could be in a car accident, unless you're independently wealthy and can afford the lifetime coverage that is needed for quadriplegics or people who are just really, really seriously injured in car accidents. You know, where's that money going to come from? If this fund isn't around, I mean, there's a certain fear factor involved there. You know, there's a former rep from St. Charles who actually came to the House. He was a Republican. He served as a Republican. Came to a House committee with his son, who was involved in a very, very serious car accident. He almost died. But he was able to survive and live because of the advanced technologies we have, and due in part because of this catastrophic claims fund that we all pay $145 a year for. You know, this was a benefit for him, and he was trying to tell his fellow Republicans, hey, you know, I know it's expensive, but we need to keep it. But on the other hand, you know, our own insurance commissioner says that the system's going to implode if we don't put some caps in to the amount of benefit we kick out. So, you know, it's going to be, it's still a struggle in the Republican caucus whether it's something they can kick out or not.
But this is not some kind of a popular movement. This is a change that the insurance companies want made here in the state.
It is. It is. But, you know, the argument being made by the insurance commissioner as well is that this is a fund that we all pay. Too, Michael. I mean, how much do we want to pay for this benefit? How much is it worth to us? Right now, we're willing to pay $145 a year, but are we willing to pay $500 a year? Are we willing to pay $1,000? I mean, at what point are we just going to throw up our hands and say, oh my God, this is just too expensive? And if we wait until the fee gets that high, we may just be stuck with it.
Do you expect, I think Governor Snyder clearly is supporting this, the elimination of the personal property tax on businesses. Do you expect that to actually happen? I know it's something municipalities are very concerned about.
No, I don't. I think it's a great topic for folks to talk about. It's something the business community is very interested in, and it's something that Republicans would just love to slay. You know, the problem is they've been trying to think of a replacement revenue source for years, and they just can't think of one, because it's not something that impacts all municipalities and townships equally. And it really just impacts those that have industrial bases, that have these factories, that have these huge machines in them, which these companies pay taxes on. So since it impacts just, you know, select communities, it's hard to try to concoct a kind of a funding mechanism that doesn't just rely on the state with a nod and a wink saying, oh yeah, we'll take care of you. Mm-hmm. Because the municipalities don't want to hear that, because they say, well, you haven't taken care of us for 10 years. You've been cutting our revenue sharing funding. And what makes us believe that you're not going to do that here? You know, mm-hmm. If you give us a constitutional guarantee, then we'll talk about it. But Otherwise, forget it. We're not going to put some of our members in a position where they could lose, you know, 50-60% of their funding. No way.
What about, finally, this one estimated $1 billion surplus? What's going to happen with that money now that the state has this big pile of money?
Well, first of all, the $1 billion number is a complete myth. It doesn't exist. Unfortunately, it's been perpetuated in the media as being that high, but it is not. We're running another story over here again to reiterate that it's less than half of that. We're looking in the $400 to $500 million range. The rest of that money is already baked into the budget. It's accounted for. It's going to be spent on other programs. It's you know, so what we're really looking at is about $400 million. And what I see happening is that this money is, first of all, it sounds like a huge chunk of money, and it is, kind of, but what's going to happen is that a piece of that's going to get carved up and put into a rainy day fund. Another bit of it's going to get stuck into ratcheting down some of our long-term debt here in the state. And they're going to find some pet one-time programs for education and such to spend a little bit of the money on, just, you know, to spread it around a little bit. But if you think that the foundation allowance is going to get reduced significantly because of this, or, you know, major cuts to the budget that have been done in the past are going to get replaced, that's just a fantasy. That's just not going to happen.
Well, that is a bit of a letdown. Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter, that's MIRSnews.com. Kyle, thank you very much for joining me.
It's my pleasure, Michael.